seen. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, we are going to be continuing a discussion that began yesterday about a proposed gas power plant in the town of Paris. We heard yesterday from an environmental group raising some concerns and questions about the proposed plant. On today's program, we hear a different perspective from a spokesperson for We Energies, Brendan Conway. And Brendan is here to spell out some specifics about the proposal and addressing some of the questions which have been raised about potential environmental impact, cost, and so on. And along the way, I think we'll learn a little bit as well about how natural gas power plants operate. And also we'll talk a bit about how this folds into the overall plans of We Energies in terms of providing energy to the state of Wisconsin and its citizens. Brendan Conway might very likely be a familiar name and face to many of you as a well-known TV journalist in the Milwaukee area for many, many years. And Brendan, first of all, welcome to the morning show.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for having us here.
Glad you're here. And how long have you been with We Energies?
About 6.5 years.
Okay, very good. So I'm guessing that when you are the spokesperson for an entity like We Energies, you end up having to educate yourself in a very rapid rate on a whole lot of sometimes really complicated issues. I should think that's an interesting challenge to the job.
Yeah, it is. It was one of the things I liked so much about television journalism, which I did for about 15 years, including 9 years in the Milwaukee area. And every day was something different, and you had to quickly learn about something, right? It'd been a criminal case or some weird or wacky thing or something interesting, or just, you know, severe weather, those type of things. And so certainly at We Energies, we touch everybody's lives across the state on a daily basis, right? Every time you flip a light switch or, you know, your heater kicks on. And there's a lot of moving parts that go into that, from the regulatory process of getting a power plant built to the construction of it to what happens when, you know, a tornado hits Wisconsin and it takes down power lines and knocks out power. So there are so many interesting things. It's a wonderful job, and it's really a wonderful company. And knowing that you're providing this essential service as we speak here today, without energy, without reliable energy, right? We wouldn't have the lights, the power, and everything else. So critical service that we provide, and it's really fun to kind of learn more and talk more about it.
Before we talk about the proposed power plant in the town of Paris, I think it would be helpful for our listeners to get something of an overview about We Energies itself, just kind of how large a company we are talking about, the scope of your reach in terms of number of customers and so on. So give us kind of the basic blueprint of who or what We Energies is.
Yeah, we serve about 2.2 million electric and natural gas customers across the state. So certainly from the state line, so certainly Kenosha County, all the way up. We have customers in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So most of our customer base is in southeastern Wisconsin on the electric side. We also serve customers in the Fox Valley, so the Appleton area, and then north of that into upper Wisconsin and the UP. And then we do have some natural gas customers spread out throughout the state in other areas. It's really two separate utilities. I mean, historically, you know, utilities were one of two things. They were electric or natural gas. And so we do have some natural gas customers outside of our electric customer area. And really, a lot of that is based on it's serving natural gas through heat. So we're talking about for your furnace there. So different than, I think, what our discussion will be today for electric generation. That's really labor-intensive and very technical. Those are underground natural gas pipes. They go into homes. They will fire up oftentimes your furnace or maybe your dryer, your oven, those type of things. And so I think historically, cities and sometimes communities maybe had electric service, but they didn't, as natural gas became more prevalent, they didn't have the want or the ability to do it. So we do have some natural gas customers spread throughout the state. And as we've seen, whether it's really, really hot, really, really cold, both of those services we provide are incredibly important. And making sure that it's there when they need it is also really important.
So you are the largest provider of energy within the state of Wisconsin?
Correct, yes.
And but not for the entire state of Wisconsin. I mean, there are parts of Wisconsin that are served by other entities. I'm just curious, what determines, I mean, how is it that We Energies, for instance, provides energy for this part of the state? Whose decision, in a sense, was that? How did that decision end up being made?
Yeah, so Wisconsin, like most states in the United States, is under a regulatory compact. So we have the we're regulated by the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin, and as part of that, you have the ability, a monopoly, to serve all those customers. So you're the only service provider in a service territory set up by the Public Service Commission, or could be agreed to by cities, counties, those type of things. But as part of that, you're regulated. So while you're the only one to serve that, you're regulated, and you must serve all customers. So you can't make a choice and say, well, we only want to serve customers in this community or this thing. The Public Service Commission says you must serve all customers. And by the way, we're proud to do that. That's not something we're forced to do. We're happy to do it. And so as part of that regulatory compact, we have the ability to serve all those customers, and then we are regulated. So everything we do, any power plant we want to build, if then the cost of those power plants or anything we do goes into rates, that's all a very public, transparent process, public documents, and the Public Service Commission has the final say on those things.
So that partly answers my next question, which is essentially what determines how many power plants you have and where they are. And I guess, I mean, legally and officially, what you were just talking about is part of that answer, but also maybe on more of sort of a technology level or a need of customers level, what determines where your power plants are, how many they are, what kind of power plants they will be? What typically goes into those kind of decisions?
Yeah, you know, it's most people, when they flip on a light, the power just comes on, right? You don't think about it, which is great. But the power grid is one of the most technical, amazing things that we have. The way it works, the way it balances, and so that's part of what goes into where to power plants. You can't just have, or you really wouldn't want to have, just one giant power plant that served an entire long area, because electrons only travel so far. There's ways you'd have to do it. So we have incredible planning people who are always looking at it. Lots of engineers. We're an engineer-focused company, and they help determine, okay, here's where it fits on the power grid. On top of that, we're part of a regional grid. So the regional grid we are part of is a 14-state regional grid that we all kind of support each other. So while we are your provider, the energy that is part of that regional grid is kind of being produced across that region. It's oftentimes referred to as like a giant swimming pool, right? At any one moment, there's all sorts of energy put into this giant swimming pool from all the power plants that are running across the region. It might be a coal plant, natural gas plant, wind, solar, biomass, hydro, all nuclear, all things we have. And it goes in that giant swimming pool. And every customer has a little straw that's kind of sucking out of that swimming pool at any moment. Might be a lot, might be a large business, might be small, might be someone who just, powering their smartphone at any one moment. So it's always balancing, making sure there's enough water in that swimming pool, because the electron goes and it's gone, except for some battery storage. It doesn't really stick around. And so how do you always balance that? And so the power plants are placed across the regional grid to make sure they can support that. And then on top of that, there's different distribution lines. Those are smaller power lines, and transmission lines, which carry higher voltage, very long distances. So it really is, and that's, by the way, the simplest version of it. It really is complicated. We just want people to be able to flip on their lights and not think about it, because, you have enough going on in your life. You don't have to worry about all. But it is this incredibly complicated, important thing that really powers our lives every day.
And it's one of those matters of infrastructure that, in some respects, is invisible to the eye. So I guess what you're saying is, when I flipped on that light switch or powered up my laptop, potentially some of that power maybe didn't even come from We Energies specifically, but maybe a tiny little portion of it is from elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, people ask sometimes, well, you're building a solar facility near us. Does that mean the power in my house is going to be solar? It's likely that more of it will be because just the way that, you know, electrons travel. But it could be anything. At any moment, right, if you're listening to this on your smartphone or at home and on your radio, it could be every little bit of power that's on the grid. It could be one of two things. It could be a dozen things.
Fascinating. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking in this portion of today's morning show with Brendan Conway, a spokesperson for We Energies. Before we talk about the specific power plant proposal in Paris, tell us at this moment, and we'll get to a little later how that might change in the future, but right at the moment, what is the balance of the various sources of energy or types of energy that are utilized by We Energies? And at least roughly, what are kind of their respective proportions?
Yeah, I mean, anything that you're aware of how power is created, that's what we have. So we certainly have coal plants, we have natural gas plants, we have the largest solar facility in the state of Wisconsin, we have the largest wind facility in the state of Wisconsin, and we also have, through a purchase power agreement, we're the largest procurer of nuclear power in the state of Wisconsin. We also have hydro facilities and a biomass facility. And so everything out there, our balance right now, we have more coal and natural gas than we do have renewable and nuclear on our system. But over the next number of years, 4 or 5 years, that's going to change dramatically. We're going to basically be using coal very little by 2030, and by 2032 have no coal on our system. And then we're greatly increasing renewable generation over the next 5 years.
And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. So let's talk about this proposed power plant in Paris, and maybe in a nutshell, explain what is prompting We Energies to do this. What is the particular situation or particular need that such a power plant in Paris would address?
Yeah, so our customers count on us every day to deliver energy reliably and safely. And it's something that's happening 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We don't get to take a minute off, much less a day off. We're going through this energy transition, as most utilities are. We're moving away from older, less efficient fossil fuel generation, and particularly fossil fuel plants, and we're building out renewable energy. More solar, more wind, battery storage is part of that. But as we know, the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow. And so how do you serve your customers with that reliable energy when those things are not available? And that's what we're proposing. Some of these new natural gas generation plants will be there to fill the need. So in the future, just a few years from now, the majority of the power on our grid will be renewable energy. It's going to be solar. It's going to be wind. We're investing $9.1 billion in new solar, wind, and battery storage over the next 5 years. That's a huge investment we're making. But we also know that there are days when it's just not that sunny, or the sun can't meet the need, or there's days when it's not very windy. There's lots of days. And so we can quickly ramp up these natural gas plants, particularly this one in the town of Paris. It's the technology is able to just turn on and turn off almost like you can, like a fan at home. And that will help fit those times when the sun isn't able to be there, because we know that in the critical cold we just had in the first part of this month, how incredibly important it was that you needed heat. You needed that something to kick on to keep your furnace going. Maybe you had a heater that was running. You know, you need those things. It's not about comfort always. Often it can be a critical need, and so we're there to provide that. But we need to be able to do it, because we know that renewables are just not able to match our 24/7 need.
Right. So my understanding is that from the start, the intention, the understanding is that this proposed power plant in Paris, I guess it will always be running, but maybe it won't always be generating energy. That the intention, I think I saw a figure of something between 20% and 50% of the time is when this might actually be firing, or whatever the best term is. Is that correct? I mean, that otherwise other kinds of energy can be a provider, but when this needs to be operating and generating energy, it will. Or is that maybe something that's more in the future as We Energies makes this shift to renewables on a bigger scale?
So one of the great things about the technology that we're proposing for the town of Paris, the RICE units, that they can turn on and turn off very quickly. So they might run as little as 10% of the time. and they might run more in a peak need, and let's say a really hot day where it's not very sunny, not very windy, they might be running higher than that. But no, they will not be running all the time. And that's what we invested in this technology in 2019 first in one of our service territories in the UPs. We've been using these already now for a number of years, and they can, as I said earlier, turn on and turn off almost like that. And when they turn on, sometimes the grid, if you don't balance the grid in a certain way, if you don't have enough energy flowing, it can be catastrophic for the power grid. They kind of has to stay at a certain level.
Yeah, you have other ways. I assume you have blackouts and brownouts and
you could,
on.
Certainly. And, yeah. And it's not as simple as then as getting back on. Once power lines can be damaged, they have to be replaced. It's why it's so important to always have the power feeding the grid reliably. And so these units in town of Paris will not be running all the time. In fact, like we said, on a sunny day, they might not turn on at all. But but when they need to be there, they're going to be there to fill that need.
Right.
And so that's kind of, and I think that message has been lost, I think maybe intentionally by some people, activists who seem to want to, for some reason, they don't have an obligation to serve customers reliably, so that it's easy to just say, well, don't do this, and then oftentimes they don't provide an actual realistic alternative. But I think also maybe there's just some general confusion people don't understand. So our proposed plants could run as little as 10% of the time, and certainly on days when they're needed, they would run more than that.
My understanding is that there is, I believe, something already in Paris, and that this is something that will be in addition to that, or that facility that already exists in Paris will be somehow transformed. Can you clarify that?
So yeah, so we actually have just opened last month, in December, a 200 megawatt solar project. The first actually large solar project in this part of the state of Wisconsin is now up and running. It's our Paris solar project, and actually there's a battery storage, the state's first large-scale battery storage facility is also being built there and is expected to be online. We've had for decades also there a natural gas plant that is, it's called a peaker plant. It only runs at peak needs. So that is there, and that's one of the reasons that the town of Paris makes a lot of sense for this project, because we have all this infrastructure there to take the power and get it onto the grid. And so anytime we're looking to propose to build anything, a solar project, a wind project, natural gas project, cost is of the utmost importance, because this would be part of customer rates if approved and if it goes into service. And so how do you keep costs as low as possible while also making sure you're serving customers reliably? And so if you already have infrastructure in place somewhere, like we do at Paris, because we already have power plants there, then it makes sense to build it closer to there. And we also happen to own some land there as part of it. So it will really be this area that those solar fields, which I was actually just out there last week, are incredible to see. 200 megawatts, it's a lot of power, especially when it's sunny out. And it can tie into all of that.
This project in Paris is part of an even larger project, and we should probably make sure that people understand that as well, that it is not only this proposed natural gas power plant in Paris, but also then a reworking of your facility in Oak Creek to shift that, I guess, from coal to natural gas. And what was a little bit surprising to me is that that's actually, it looks like, a far more costly venture than this project in Paris. I would have sort of guessed it might have been the opposite.
Yeah. So the Paris project is about $280 million is the cost for 128 megawatts. So it's, you know, good size for the area, but it's not necessarily a huge amount. It's less than the solar facility that is there. That's a 200 megawatt and 128 megawatts. Again, different types of generation. The Paris one can, or the natural gas could run all the time. So on our Oak Creek campus, which most people, it's a very large campus. We actually have two coal plants there. We have our Oak Creek power plant, which has been serving customers since the 1950s, 1960s. We're closing that plant. We closed two units last year, and we plan to close the other two units this year. We also have on that campus what we call the Elm Road Generating Station. It's one of the newer coal units, coal power plants in America. It's also one of the cleanest because it's new. And that opened up in like 2008, 2009, 2010, that general timeline. So what we are proposing is to, as we close the older units, transitioning those newer units to natural gas. But on top of that, and I think this is what you're referencing, we're actually proposing to build a different natural gas plant on that site. So the transition from the Elm Road plant from coal to natural gas, that's not part of this discussion right now. That's something that we're still testing, refining, and that will be in the future. What we're proposing to build is just a slightly different type of technology. So you have the RICE units in what that stands for, by the way, I failed to say this earlier, reciprocating internal combustion engine, RICE. It's a different type of technology we're proposing to build at the Oak Creek site. And again, it's because there are different points on the grid, and that plant would actually only run about 20% of the time we're proposing to build.
Interesting. This might be as good a time as any to step back into something even maybe more basic and just have you explain to the best of your ability. I don't envy you the challenge of explaining how a natural gas power plant works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does it generate the power that it does? What is the means by which that occurs?
Yeah, so whether it's coal or natural gas or biomass, or there's other types, it's all the same idea. You're using a fuel to create heat to turn an engine or a turbine, and then that is what's generating the electricity as it turns. And so the natural gas is just the fuel that helps turn the engine. And actually, the proposed plant in the town of Paris, those are really just big engines. I mean, they're the type of engine you might find on a ship. You know, a big ship or a railroad car. There are actually just a number of engines that create that overall megawatt. They're about 18 to 20 megawatts each, and all it does is it just takes that fuel, so the natural gas. It's firing up that engine, much like when you turn on your car. It's using a different type of fuel there. One of the nice things about what we're proposing, this RICE units, what we've now have this. We have two other plants. I mentioned one earlier. And we just opened up one last year or 2 years ago elsewhere in Wisconsin, is they can, we were the first company in the world to test, they can actually use hydrogen as well. So right now they're natural gas fired, but they can use hydrogen. Hydrogen is clean burning, or can be clean burning, zero emissions. And so we tested that a few years ago. We recognized internationally for doing that. And so we know that for now we're proposing natural gas, but in the future they could be a mix of hydrogen, a blend. And one day there may be a future where they're running fully on hydrogen. So while we're building for the now, we're also building for the future.
Hmm. So where does the natural gas come from? And then and how does it, for instance, get to Paris?
Yeah, I mean, natural gas is a domestically produced energy source, which is great, right? We're not shipping it in. It's matter of fact, we are an exporter of natural gas, this country is. All over the country, there is, you know, you've probably heard the term fracking. And so then once it goes from whoever brings it up, you know, different companies, it goes into the interstate pipeline system and just goes across the country, quite honestly. They're all over the place, these interstate pipelines. They're underground. So that's what's interesting about natural gas. You rarely see it. The infrastructure is almost wholly underground. And then it would get to our facilities, what we call a gate station, and then we would redirect it where it needs to go. So maybe it goes into your home to heat your furnace, or it goes into one of our power plants.
And the pipelines to transport this natural gas, those already exist, or do more pipes need to be laid for this Paris project?
There would be some, but not significant. We actually have an area there. We had a big expansion a number of years ago because we've seen such growth in this part of the state. Now, this, again, predates these plans, but we have seen explosive growth from economic development and homes, and I mean, you know, no one knows that better than Kenosha County. I mean, all the jobs and the businesses that are opening. And so we actually expanded the natural gas pipe system a few years ago, and so there would be some extension as well, but that's not a significant portion of that, in particular at the Paris site, because we do have infrastructure there.
Right. And I guess, although we touched on this earlier, it's important to acknowledge the that some of this, at least, is driven by not just homes bursting up all over the place, but also some huge businesses, including, of course, this Microsoft facility, which I have read is going to be requiring an immense amount of energy. How much is that a part of why this is necessary?
Yeah, I mean, they will help us meet. These proposed plants are certainly going to help us meet the robust demand that we've seen, what we call the I-94 corridor, so from Milwaukee to Chicago. It's growing up, it's going everywhere. But it's beyond just that. So, yes, there's the growth of the businesses, but there's also this call nationally from the people who are the watchdogs of the energy grid that, as I mentioned earlier, that regional grid across the country, older, less efficient fossil fuel plants, like coal plants particularly, are closing. And they're oftentimes being replaced with wind, solar, those type of things, which is great. Though long term, those are very cost effective. But again, they're not always there to meet the need. And so what we've seen from kind of these watchdogs is we need to have these power plants that can ramp up very quickly and that can fill the need. So it's really part of this duel. The immense growth we're seeing, the call to make sure we have as people are using more and more electricity. I mean, it is clear that in our lives, electricity has never been more important.
Oh,
we count on it to power our laptops and, you know, the things we've always done around our houses. And as we move into maybe you have an electric vehicle, right? There's more and more people are moving to other things. Electrification is a big thing that's happening across the country. So it's never been more important to have that reliable energy. It's never been more important for us to deliver it. And that's what these plans are here to do.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Brendan Conway, a spokesperson for We Energies, and we are talking about a proposed natural gas power plant in the town of Paris. And we will be talking in just a little bit about what this process actually looks like. Some environmental groups, including the one that we heard from yesterday on the morning show, have been calling this proposed plant in Paris a methane power plant. I wonder if you could clarify the terminology. How do we best describe this plant, just in terms of what kind of a power plant it is? And I gather that in your opinion, at least, it is really not quite accurate to call this a methane power plant.
Yeah. Well, and I'm smiling as you say that because, you know, there's kind of, you know, an old tactic, and I think it's probably a political tactic, but when the facts are not on your side, try to distract and misinform. And so natural gas is the term that has been used for decades. By the way, if you look it up in the EPA's website, it says natural gas. And you look on the Wisconsin DNR, and even on Clean Wisconsin, one of the, you know, most activist groups in the state of Wisconsin, they also, you know, refer to it as natural gas. So I think there are activists out there which unfortunately are trying to distract people from what is actually happening. So these are proposed natural gas plants. I think they want to just try to confuse people. Matter of fact, I've had journalists call me who are confused. What is this methane plant? When we explain natural gas, say, oh, okay. But it's just unfortunate that we can't have a fact-based discussion, that there's certain people want to confuse people. But that's their right to do so. We just think it's maybe not fair to the people they're trying to reach.
Right. Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, the framing of this kind of has to do with, I suppose it's like, you know, just because some food is natural, that doesn't mean it might not be poisonous. I mean, some berry you shouldn't eat is natural. And so people might hear the term natural as in natural gas and just immediately assume that this is an entirely happy, problem-free source of energy. And of course, you know, as I think you're about to acknowledge, there are legitimate concerns. I mean, whenever we are generating huge amounts of energy, it comes at not just a financial cost, but there are also ramifications for the environment. So from your perspective, what are the most significant environmental impacts from natural gas in general, and particularly potentially from this proposed plant in Paris, and what does We Energy have to say about that, or in what way have you set up safeguards to be really diligent about those concerns?
Yeah, so all of our power plants go through a really strict regulatory process. So including, you want to build a solar facility, there's an environmental impact study that goes through. You want to build a natural gas facility. And every step of the way, all of our power plants meet strict local, state, and federal requirements. Right? So we're talking about the EPA, the DNR, the Clean Air Act, everything that's been, you know, for generations has been in play. All of them meet that, and these will also. There is, for some reason, I think, an effort, again, to trick people, fool people. I know your speaker yesterday talked about a report they put on out that made some claims that, you know, are not supported by facts around health impacts. And she mentioned that they used an EPA database or something to put it all together. These power plants meet EPA rules. So the EPA looks at these things. They have guidelines, and of course this power plant will meet that. And that is part of this long discussion. We made our first initial filing actually last February, and then our formal filing in April of 2024 for this power plant. So this has been going on for quite a long time. We don't expect the Public Service Commission will make a decision for months from now. So this is a well over a year plus process that goes into this. And that does include all sorts of health studies and health impacts. And so anything you're going to do is going to impact the land, the air, the environment, again, whether it's wind or solar or, you know, nuclear or natural gas. And that stuff is all being balanced by regulators all the time. But I just think we want to have a fact-based discussion. And and for the groups that I think are interested in tricking people, it's just unfortunate.
Right. So in a nutshell, at least, what are the environmental impacts from natural gas? I mean, what do they tend to be? Are we talking, in terms of the most significant impact, are we talking about stuff that goes in the air, from this process? And is We Energies required to do something in terms of its technology to either combat that or curb that or address that in some way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, very much so. Strict regulation. So as it from everywhere from how it's handled in the pipes to how it is burned to what burns off, which is, you know, carbon dioxide. I looked at Clean Wisconsin, which is one of the main advocacy groups in the state of Wisconsin who advocates for clean. And just in August of last year, you Google, it's on their website, they refer to natural gas as a cleaner burning than other fossil fuels. And compared to coal, it emits about half as much carbon dioxide to produce the same amount of energy, which is true. So for years, people, as we're calling on coal, transition to natural gas. It's about half as much as carbon dioxide. And so that, as we're transitioning away from coal and moving to these different generation sources, we've reduced our carbon dioxide emissions 54% already, and we're on track to continue to do so in the coming years, be net zero by 2050, which is kind of the standard that everybody is looking to meet. And part of that is, yes, we'll still have these power plants that emit some emissions, but we have to, again, look at reliability. So everything is a balance. And how do you make sure that we provide that critical service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year? And these plants will help us do that.
I think what you're essentially saying is, wouldn't it be lovely if we could generate energy with absolutely no environmental impact whatsoever? And what you're also saying is, we have to have electricity, and we have to have a lot of it. And so part of this is a balancing act of legitimate need for energy versus curbing environmental impacts as much as is humanly possible. And of course, the interesting debates and discussion are about that balancing act and so on. And that's of course why this needs to be as open and transparent a process as it is. So explain to our listeners what this process is and where we are in that timeline in terms of this proposed plan.
Yeah, so the Public Service Commission, if you want to build anything, or really want to do anything, it goes through this very public process. So we made the formal filing in April of last year, 2024. There has been literally hundreds and thousands of pages of documents filed back and forth. Groups can become part of it. They become interveners, and they can then request we send information. Certainly the Public Service Commission requests reams of data that we're happy to provide, and that's all on their website. They take public comment via email, but now they're having public meetings next week on February 5th, and they will take that in, and then they'll continue to be more back and forth, kind of, you know, from the lawyers and from the regulators, and then we expect they would make a decision later this year. So it is a long process, but it's a very transparent one, and it should be a long process where there is a lot of open discussion and a lot of looking into and asking questions. And so, you know, we have to make the case why this should be built, and that's part of what this is. And then the Public Service Commission will make the final decision.
Right. And you made brief mention, and I'm afraid we only have time to restate this fairly briefly, but I know that one of the things you want to be sure the public understands is We Energies' commitment to shifting the balance of where we get our energy from towards more and more of these renewable energy sources that do not impact the environment in the way that we've been talking about.
Right, yes. And everything, by the way, impacts the environment, right?
Sure.
There's people who say wind farms, with birds. But we are, and it is a frustration, I think, from anyone who pays attention to what's going on, where we are already, and have been for years, the largest investor of renewable energy in the state of Wisconsin. We were the first ones to have wind farms 20 years ago. We every year comes online the biggest solar project, and we own and operate those, right? So we're already making huge commitments. But on top of that, we're planning to invest $9.1 billion in the coming 5 years on new solar, wind, and battery storage. It's going to more than quadruple our renewable energy on the grid. And at the same time, we're closing coal plants, right? We're lowering our emissions. But in all of this, and I think most customers, this is what they care about, is making sure that we have that reliable energy that people count on. And so balancing everything. But make no mistake, we're moving to that cleaner energy future, and these plants, these proposed natural gas plants, will support that.
Brendan Conway is a spokesperson for We Energies, and I assume that there is a website that people can go to where they could find out even more information than what you've shared today.
Yeah, the Public Service Commission actually has a great website with all these things. You can obviously go to we-energies.com to learn more about anything you have as a customer or any questions. We'd certainly encourage you to reach out. But the Public Service Commission is where it houses the information on these regulatory filings.
Very good. Brendan Conway, appreciate your time. Thank you for making the trip to WGTD Studios to be with us today and to share all this important information.
Yes, happy to.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD, and here's part two. And we're spending the next few minutes of WGTD's Morning Show with David Anderson, music director of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. And we have connected with David Anderson on any number of occasions over the years to talk about the various wonderful presentations and concerts of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. What we're talking about today is actually not exactly your concert, or not just a concert, but the annual Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra Gala, their biggest fundraising event of the year. And this one coming up on Saturday, February 8th, is called Putting on the Glitz, and it will be occurring in one of the beautiful ballrooms at the Abbey Resort. And it's going to be quite a night of delicious food and wonderful music. And David Anderson joins us to talk about all that is in store and the importance of this fundraising event. David Anderson, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
You are off to a good start already with two concerts in this current season. A concert back in early November, and another in late December, and of course have two more concerts coming up a little bit later in the spring. It is a typically busy and wonderfully varied program by the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. For those who are listening who might not be well acquainted with the ensemble and, in a sense, how it operates, give us some basic background on the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra.
Well, we're a community orchestra in Lake Geneva, meaning that our players are volunteers. They come from all walks of life, and a lot of them come from the Lake Geneva area, but a lot of them drive from quite far away. Some in Kenosha, some in Elgin, Madison, Rockford, Milwaukee, and so we all have this common goal, and that's to perform great orchestral music. And we are so thrilled for the gala coming up on February 8th. Because it's a chance for us to do kind of a different kind of a concert, sort of like put on a really cool event. It's kind of a longer event, but you know, only a portion of that event is orchestral music. But the entire goal of the entire event is, of course, to support the orchestra. This, like you mentioned, this is our biggest fundraiser of the year.
And it sounds like it will be a nice, wonderful night in which people are going to really get their money's worth, because from the cocktail hour to the dinner hour to the orchestra concert and then to other kind of music that will finish out the evening, it's like a long, epic event that unfolds with different chapters or different courses. It sounds like a huge thing to put together, but it also sounds like something that's going to be truly lovely.
Absolutely, yeah. We've kind of become one of the winter traditions in the Lake Geneva area, using this kind of event, the smaller orchestral concert, the cocktails, silent auction, and then we have a live swing band. So it's not every day that you get a chance to hear a live swing band, and if you like to dance to swing band music, you have the chance to do that at the end of the evening. Some people maybe they don't like to dance, but they just like to listen to this live swing band. We're going to have a vocalist. Her name is Maureen Christine, and she will be singing with both the swing band and as part of the orchestra concert.
What is planned for the actual orchestra concert, the orchestra program that will follow dinner?
Well, each of these galas have had themes over the years. We've had, I think last year our theme was Around the World. We had a theme, Symphony of the Sea. We even had a circus theme 1 year. But one of the common things that happens every year, this is like a really elegant event. You know, people like to get dressed up. It's not just like all black for the players. You know, there's tuxedos, but the ladies like to wear the very fancy gowns. And so our gala chair, who is amazing, her name is Sue Childress, and she's like, what if we just highlighted this elegance and the glitz and the glam factor? And so that's why it's called Putting on the Glitz. And so it just sort of highlights the ethos of the entire event. And so, of course, if you do an event called Putting on the Glitz, you're going to have to play Putting on the Ritz. And so we're going to do an Irving Berlin arrangement that has Putting on the Ritz, and it also has like Blue Skies and Alexander's Ragtime Band. So that's a one of the pieces that we'll be playing. Another one that we'll be doing is Moon River with Maureen Christine. We'll be singing. So the vocalist for the swing band will also be singing something with the orchestra as well. We're thinking, well, you know, just an opera is an elegant event, and so we're going to do an overture from a Mozart opera, Marriage of Figaro. We'll do a Tchaikovsky waltz from Sleeping Beauty, and then we'll also include a few tunes from My Fair Lady.
Mm. The photo on your website shows the Harbor Master Ballroom at the Abbey Resort, where this is going to be taking place, and it looks like an absolutely sumptuous setting for an event like this.
Oh, we love being at the Abbey. They are incredible hosts. You know, we have plenty of space. We can sell even more tickets than we have sold already, and it helps enhance the event. Of course, you know, we have this whole gala committee that they decorate things. They decorate the entire room, and so sort of every single sense, you know, your sight, your sound, your taste, what it feels like, you know, everything. You know, this will be an event for all of the senses.
Wonderful. So this event, Putting on the Glitz, is the fundraising gala of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra coming up on Saturday, February 8th. It all begins at 5 p.m., and again, it occurs in the Harbor Master Ballroom at the Abbey Resort, an event that will include cocktail hour, dinner, a lovely orchestra concert, and then finally dancing and listening with a live swing band, a terrific program put together. And David Anderson, one of the key figures helping to put all of this together. David Anderson, maybe you could just say a quick word about who leads and guides the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra, aside, of course, from yourself as its music director.
Well, we're governed by a board of directors, and so they are ultimately responsible for all of the decisions, like hiring the music director. We also have an executive director. Her name is Karen Bullock. She's an incredible orchestral administrator, very talented. And then people on the board and then in the orchestra, we rely on volunteers. And I mentioned the name Sue Childress. She is the gala chair, and Anne McCord is heading up the silent auction this year. And so there's a lot that goes into, you know, running an orchestra, and so these people have a really important part of doing so.
Very good. Well, we hope that a lot of people will carefully consider coming out on Saturday, February 8th, for what sounds like a sparkling, wonderful evening, Putting on the Glitz. If people are interested in purchasing tickets for this event, what do they need to do, and by what deadline?
You can go to lakegenevaorchestra.org and click on the graphic that says Putting on the Glitz. There's a big button that says click here to purchase gala tickets, and so you can do that. You can also call 262-359-9072 And you can leave a message, and somebody will call you back and make sure that you're able to navigate through the process of purchasing a ticket for our gala.
Very good. And is there a deadline for purchasing a ticket?
There is. I think it is going to be a few days before the event. You know, of course, because there's a full mule involved. You know, we have to make sure that we get an accurate count
sure.
of that. And I believe the date is on the Wednesday before.
Okay.
So that would be the 4th.
Right. So we want people to not dawdle in making
right.
their plans for February 8th. And then, of course, on the website, people can also read about the two concerts that will finish out the season, one on April 5th and one on May 17th, that also look like wonderful evenings of music with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. David Anderson, music director, we wish you and all of your musicians and patrons a lovely evening of music and fun. And thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Greg. Appreciate it.
And this wonderful, sparkling gala event of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra is going to include, as Maestro Anderson said, some music from Lerner and Lowe's marvelous score, My Fair Lady. Here's a little taste of I Could Have Danced All Night. And don't forget to mark your calendar for February 8th for Putting on the Glitz with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. More information at lakegenevaorchestra.org. Over the weekend, we have some fun morning show interviews from the archives available over the podcast. Tomorrow, Mark Kreidler, an interview from 2007, one of my all-time favorite interviews. His book is 4 Days to Glory, and he follows the efforts of two amazing young high school wrestlers in Iowa, both 3-time state champions at that point, each vying for a 4th state wrestling title. A beautiful, wonderful story and a great book. Next week on the morning show in broadcast on Monday to kick off Black History Month, Andrew Sillin and a book called Kidnapped at Sea, The Civil War Voyage of David Henry White. And on Tuesday, an interview I've recorded with Frank McGrath, a nephew of our news director, Dave McGrath. Frank McGrath sadly lost his house in Antelita, California in the Eaton wildfire of just a couple of weeks ago. And we hear a detailed account of what he and his family experienced. That will be on Tuesday. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be cloudy, windy, and rainy, and foggy this morning as well, with a high temperature of 42 degrees. Cloudy, windy, cold conditions overnight with a low of 25. Cloudy, breezy tomorrow with a high of 37 degrees, warming back up to the upper 40s for a high on Sunday as cloudiness continues. This is WGTD